going to radicalimagination.info. Let me give you that again for full information about this conference, radicalimagination.info. Okay, let's jump right into today's program. New information has emerged recently that, in a way, is an old story. Mega banks in this country, you know, the likes of Citibank, Bank of America, JP Morgan Chase, and so on, have been investing huge billions, even trillions of dollars, off their books. It doesn't show up on their books because it's not required to, because they have found, yes, one more time, a way around the effort to regulate and control those banks. And they're investing huge amounts of money in a variety of these gimmicks. The most interesting is called naked shorts. That's when you can borrow stocks, sell them right away, hoping that they go down in value so that you can buy them at a lower price and give them back to whoever you borrowed them from. It's an old gambit. It's now being used, and it's called naked because often the stocks that are sold for this purpose weren't borrowed. They are just imaginary. And if that got caught, if there's something goes wrong, well, yes, you can have that kind of meltdown that you had back in 2008. This kind of shenanigan, this kind of evasive, dangerous, risky money-making activity by banks is as old as banks. It's as old as capitalism of the last three or four centuries. And we have an endless process being run again, in which the banks do something that is too risky and it collapses and they lose a lot of money and they lose a lot of their depositors' money and we have a meltdown and we have a crisis and we have a commission and we have reforms and we have laws and the banks fight them all the way, and when they can't win that fight, they have a ploy. They get around the reforms, they get around the new rules, and then the whole process starts again. And then we have another crash. We had a monster back in 1930s that produced a bunch of rules that the banks got around. We had another monster in 2008. We're building to another monster, and I'm just letting you know, if you don't change the system, it will do this to you in the future the way it always has in the past. Now, Elon Musk, he has come out, along with Republicans and conservatives, on the following idea, that the U.S. Census, when it counts how many people are in each of the 50 states, should not count people who are not citizens. Okay, what's this about? Well, they want us to believe that since you get a congressional seat, you get the right to have a congressional representative according to how many people live in each part of each state. They don't want there to be representatives that are in some way responsive to non-citizens. I find this stunning. I don't expect anything from Elon Musk, and he doesn't much disappoint me. But even here, the level of ignorance is incredible. Let's remember what we call ourselves, a democracy. Here's what democracy means. If you are affected by a decision, you as a human being, you have the right to participate in it. Congress, the U.S. Congress, makes lots of decisions that affect us. And they affect not only those of us that are citizens, but those of us who are not. Therefore, you need to have a representative that can be voted on by the non-citizen because the non-citizen is affected by the decisions the representatives make. Excluding non-citizens means to exclude democracy, which is the reality of what Musk and the Republicans are doing. They just don't know or care. But I do, and you do. This is an anti-democratic move, as well as a grubby political hustle by the people involved, including Mr. Musk. Then there's the remarkable story I need to share with you about a meeting between presidential hopeful Donald Trump and a group of oil and gas industry executives. And here's what the Washington Post and other papers reported about this meeting. Mr. Trump explained he needs $1 billion.
Wow.
To win the presidency. And he was clearly talking to oil executives who could be in a position to give him that. And so he sweetened the conversation by saying that if he were elected, he would reverse all the subsidies given to electric car manufacturers. That's right. So we'd all be going back to reliance on gas-powered vehicles. You know, in the common mind, mine too, this is like bribery. They are bribing the president. They can give him money, and he can give them a way to make a fortune, many, many, many billions. So it's worth it for them. Has this become so normal that we all pretend there's nothing remarkable about corporate executives giving huge money to somebody who gives them a huge commercial advantage so we won't have the choice of electric vehicles? Maybe that's where we are. Maybe that's why the clever comedians keep telling us we have the best government money can buy. The final story for the first half of today's program is a response to a question that has been addressed to me by many of you. We all know about the activity of students protesting what the Israeli government is doing in Gaza, protesting the lack of humanitarian support, and usually coupled with a condemnation of what Hamas did on October 7th. You can be against what Hamas did and likewise against what Israel has done ever since to the people and cities of Gaza. And you wanted to know whether the labor movement has been active. And a number of you asked a question under the presumption, because I could see it from what you wrote, that the labor movement hasn't been. That's not correct. The labor movement has been. In fact, the labor movement took remarkable actions before the students did. And I'm not interested in comparing beyond that, but in correcting the notion that there hasn't been labor action. And I asked my associate, Charlie Fabian, whom many of you now know, to do some work, and he did. And here's what he found. The earliest are in November, shortly after Hamas's initial attack. In November already, the Israeli response seemed to a number of people in the labor movement over the top. So, for example, it begins with the International Longshoremen Workers Union on the West Coast. Passed a resolution November 17, expressing their solidarity with the Palestinian General Federation of Trade Unions and arguing that the Israeli attack on Gaza was indefensible while also condemning what Hamas did on October 7th. And that was typical of how labor unions handled it. But they said they want to support the Palestinians against the genocidal bombing, that's the words of the Longshoremen Union, of civilians in Gaza. In addition to that local 10 of the longshoremen, the United Electrical Workers, I'm going to start reading off where the actions were. The United Food and Commercial Workers, Local 3000, based in the state of Washington, issued a labor call for a ceasefire in November. That has now been signed by the Chicago Teachers Union, AFL-CIO, the United Auto Workers, Region 6 and 9A, Service Employees International Union, International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 520, and quite a few more. On November 8th, the American Postal Workers Union issued a statement calling on our government, which is the primary foreign benefactor of the Israeli government, to use all its power to protect innocent lives. On February of this year, the National AFL-CIO also called for a ceasefire, long before the United States government did, including the immediate release of all hostages and provision of desperately needed shelter, food, medicine, etc. Labor unions in Europe and elsewhere went further. Again, I can only give you a smattering. In Spain, workers at the port of Barcelona refused to transport weapons to Israel. Workers for the aerospace company Airbus in Getafe, Spain, organized a march within their factory. Solidarity with Palestine, no arms sales to Israel. In Belgium, several transportation unions called on their members not to transport weapons by air after some reported weapons had been sent to Israel. In Italy, dock workers at this port of Genoa from the independent union Collettivo Autonomo Lavoratori Portuali, with community allies, I hope I did that all right, on November, blockaded the movement of cargo for Israel arms, and again did that at the port of Salerno. Here's an interesting one. In India, 12 union federations representing 100 million Indian workers are strongly opposing talks between Israel and India aimed at sending 100,000 Indian construction workers to replace the Palestinian workers whose work permits Israel has canceled. Israel has a plan not to allow 100,000 Palestinians to keep their jobs and are getting India. Canada, indigenous rank and file union organizers shut down factories, arms factories scheduled for shipping to Israel in Hamilton, Toronto, Montreal, and Ottawa. In UK, there were movements and demonstrations closing arms factories. So labor has been active. It's very important to understand there already is a de facto labor student, worker student alliance around this issue of the horrific militarization of the war that Israel has carried out, a lopsided, unequal war against the people of Gaza, masquerading as an attempt to deal with Hamas, which is a tiny fraction of what is being destroyed in Gaza. It's very important to understand that that movement is in its early stages and can be as powerful in shaping world history as the parallel movement was against the war in Vietnam years ago. We've come to the end of the first half of today's program. Please stay with us. We have an important interview with labor organizers when we return. Welcome back, friends, to the second half of today's Economic Update. I am very pleased and proud and gratified to have with us today two Starbucks union organizers who've gone on from remarkable work doing that to a more broadly involved union organizing project. The first is Jazz Brzezak, and I want to introduce Jazz first, union organizer and co-founder of the Inside Organizers School. We'll hear more about that in a few minutes. Jazz worked as a Starbucks barista in Buffalo, New York, helping to start Starbucks Workers United and unionize the first Starbucks in the United States. As Workers United organizing director for New York and Vermont, Jazz also helped organizing committees at other companies, including Ben & Jerry's and Tesla. Now a visiting fellow at the University of California, Berkeley, Jazz works full-time on the Inside Organizer School that we will be discussing. Our second guest is Casey Moore. Casey is a union organizer, communications specialist, and the co-executive director for the Inside Organizer School. Casey also worked as a SALT at the Buffalo Starbucks store and helped to start the Starbucks Workers United campaign and then to expand it nationally, building communications that eventually reached over 140 million views on TikTok. Since then, Casey has been leading organizing campaigns across upstate New York. So first of all, to both Jazz and Casey, thank you very much for your time and for all that you're going to tell us about union organizing, given your experience on what we might call the front lines. So let me start. Tell us, if you can, briefly, What happened at Starbucks? So many people have read snippets here and there. Can you give us, with the limits of time, a sense of what was accomplished there, what it meant to be a SALT, and what you think the importance is of what was accomplished at that Buffalo Starbucks?
Well, thanks so much for having us, and I can kick us off. So I think when we started the Starbucks campaign, we thought that it was part of this project to unionize coffee shops across Buffalo, New York. And I had come into the labor movement because I was a labor history nerd. So I knew about the industrial workers of the world and the Wobblies. And what we were trying to do in Buffalo was bring back that kind of industrial unionism and, you know, not just organize a hot shop, but organize the entire industry. So we had just organized a local chain called Spot Coffee, and Starbucks workers started reaching out. And one of my friends ended up getting fired for trying to start unionizing their Starbucks location. Then the pandemic happened, and I came back to Buffalo and ended up getting a job at Starbucks to try to help organize. We ended up realizing quickly that we needed more help to build that network across the stores. And so Casey and a group of other people volunteered to get jobs at Starbucks to help workers organize and to be the spark that could find the people like Michelle Eisen, a 12-year Starbucks worker, who could really lead the campaign. So we didn't expect initially for the campaign to take off in the way that it did, but workers around the country responded. And we really believe that, you know, when workers see organizing, they think, okay, if they can do it, we can do it. And that's why we're trying to expand the Starbucks model through the school, but more on that in a moment.
Tell us about this word SALT. I know it fascinates people. What exactly is a SALT? S-A-L-T.
So besides salt and pepper, which pepper is also kind of a term in the labor movement as well, a SALT is simply somebody that has the intent when they get a job to organize wherever they work. So as Jazz was kind of saying in history, it was a practice that was widely used, kind of the phrase being get on the job and organize. So a SALT is another term for what you could call an inside organizer, somebody who has the intention of organizing a workplace wherever they go. But as somebody that we worked with, Richard Bensinger, often says, is that in this day and age, everybody is a SALT in a lot of ways. Everybody needs to get a job. There's even lots of college kids and all sorts of people from various education levels that go and work at Starbucks. And so the way Jazz and I view it is everybody needs a job. So why not take a job with the intention to organize a union as well? Because if you're a worker, you deserve a union. And it's kind of as simple as that.
Okay, let's explore a little bit, if I understand correctly, that somehow you went from your experience in a workplace, in a Starbucks, building a union in the ways you've just briefly summarized. How do we take us how you went from that to this school? What is this school? Why this school? And why are you doing this project of building that kind of school?
So the school was actually the foundation of the Starbucks campaign. We started it in 2018 as a very informal collection of organizers to train people on how to unionize their workplaces. So it was folks from Workers United, from the Amalgamated Transit Union, from Unite Here, from a small group of unions that believed that any workplace was organizable if you had people who were willing to take on the work of actually going into a workplace and talking to people and starting organizing. So out of this very small school, people started coming and then taking the lessons back into their workplaces. And so whether they were bus drivers, baristas, you know, workers in factories or distribution centers, they were able to win unions in their workplaces. And so the school is why I decided that the best thing I could do to help Starbucks workers organize was to actually get a job there myself. So after we saw the campaign spread and saw that workers around the country really wanted the kind of organizing model that the school promotes, which is worker-led, very democratic local autonomy within the union, workers responded overwhelmingly with, you know, huge support for that. And I think that that transcends industries and transcends companies. And so we've decided to put all of our energy into the school, because if we can take that model to companies, you know, beyond Starbucks, then we can really meet this surge in worker interest around organizing.
Can you give us an idea of how the school works and how it has affected the people who've come through it so far?
Yeah. So primarily the school starts with a 3-day training weekend, typically from Friday to Sunday. And the first day, Friday, we do a lot of, you know, people get to know each other. We do a lot of kind of icebreakers and fun things like that. But the first day is really focused on the philosophy of organizing, why we do inside organizing, why it's important. I think the other thing that we found in private sector organizing in this day and age is that companies fight back very hard, and there's very intense union busting. And so another reason why inside organizers are so important is because it's one of the only ways that we can level the playing field. And so we kind of talk about all of these things and what role an inside organizer plays in a campaign. You know, workers, there's so much demand by workers already to organize their workplaces. So in a lot of ways, an inside organizer, their role is to simply identify the folks that can already lead the campaign and give them the resources and education and connection that they need to do it themselves. So we talk a lot about that philosophy and why we do the work that we do. The next day, Saturday, is truly an in-depth, we go into skills. We go into how do you run an NLRB union election? How do you have one-on-one conversations with folks? What is labor law and how can it help you? And also, how can it not help you? And so we really do a lot of skills building that day. And Sunday is, of course, reserved for the contract fight. So a lot of people think that organizing a union is hard, but in a lot of ways, winning a first contract is the bigger battle after you win your union. So we do a lot of case studies, studying what's worked in the past, what hasn't worked, and talking about what hammer, which is essentially what you bring down on a company to force them to the bargaining table. And from there, we've built a network of people who have done this now, who have done this in the past and who want to do this. So we're really building a community of people who share the same organizing values and are making huge differences in their workplaces all across the country. And we've had people graduate the program and come back and actually be instructors in the program. And we've had so many people that have said that this has changed their life, and they've never really felt more empowered or like they were doing. This is the most important thing that they've done in their life.
You know, I'm struck as a professor of economic history. What you're telling me is, besides literally inspiring, you're telling me that there's a real movement going on here, that in a way what you discovered as the appetite or the interest across industries has now been matched by a response, which is what the word organizing always meant, to begin to give it a structure, an institutional stability, a way of building cadre, they used to be called, that could become the organizer of the organizer of the organizer in a kind of endless process that is socially very, very powerful and can't be stopped by a defeat here or there. Do you have a sense, and this is a question I ask everybody on the program sooner or later, do you have a sense that we are once again in a moment of American history like the 1930s, in which there's a surge of a built up over many decades demand for something which a union movement is in a position to respond to and to give shape and organization to? Do you feel caught up in something like that?
I think that we're at a crisis moment, actually, where workers are facing, on the one hand, a rising surge of fascism around the world and attacks on every form of democracy. But the most undemocratic system that we tolerate in society is the workplace, because without a union, it is a dictatorship.
Right.
And I think that building the labor movement is the best possible defense against fascism, and that political parties aren't giving workers alternatives to the kind of right-wing populism that's co-opting the real economic situations that people see themselves in, and the lack of solutions from people in power. So I think the labor movement is our only hope of moving society in a more just and caring and democratic direction. And I think people are seeing that. I mean, a lot of these union campaigns are led by people who are seeing there's no hope for economic advancement in the way that previous generations saw it. A lot of these organizing committee leaders are queer, trans, people of color, women, people who are on the front lines of a lot of these other issues in society and who would be the most affected by rising fascism. And I think that we're seeing the labor movement has a moment to act, and we're trying to do everything we can to ensure workers actually have that ability to fight back.
Well, we've run out of time, as we always do, but I want to congratulate you. I think you are doing extraordinarily important work. I urge everyone to learn about this, to be supportive in every way that you can, because that's how a movement really becomes powerful. And here are young people, people my age used to worry, where are the young people? Well, you're showing us where they are and what they're doing. More power to you, literally. And to all of my audience, I look forward, of course, to speaking with you again next week.
KYRS relies on listeners like you to keep independent media alive in our community with unique music, news, views, and culture heard nowhere else. Become a part of the indie media by texting Give KYRS, GiveKYRS, to 44321 or online at kyrs.org. Thanks.
Tune in to Earth Matters Now every Tuesday at noon. Laura and Mike will share stories about the climate crisis, wildlife, and the people helping our planet become sustainable. That's Earth Matters Now, Tuesdays at noon.
The official Pride Cruise departs June 1st at 5 p.m. from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, featuring dancing, drag, drinks, karaoke, and fun. Information and tickets online at SpokanePride.org/Pride Events.
Well, I don't lie and I don't cheat. There's a lot of lovers that still gotta meet.
Thin Air Community Radio and Brick West present Brickfest 2024, Saturday, June 1st, 2 to 10 p.m. Get ready to start your summer with our first annual Brickfest live music festival. 10 acts, 2 stages featuring Vika and the Velvets, London Get Down, Jinx, Warren Dunes, Last of the Red Hot Mamas, The Holy Broke, Rosie Sircone, Jimmy Nudge, Kyle Richard, and August to August. This is going to be huge, so mark your calendars for Brickfest on June 1st, Brick West Plaza, 1318 West 1st Avenue in Spokane.
We might take a trip across the sea, or it could be a secret just for me.
This is your KYRS live and local calendar for May 24th through the 28th. Friday through Monday, Burning Cow Barter Fair with Lindsay Lee, Antique Sex Machine, Jacob Van Now, Weary Traveler, and many others in Springdale. Friday, Pallets, Pulling for Victory, and others at the Big Dipper, Jenny Don't and the Spurs, and Silver Treason at Nine Bar and Bistro, and the Ron Green Band at Zola. Saturday, Heat Speak at the Lilac Bowl in Riverfront Park, Jason Perry at Big Barn Brewing, Deb the Wolf at Rocket Market, Digress at the Big Dipper, and Will DeBeast at the Red Room. Sunday, Megan Sullivan at Iron Horse in the Valley, Spare Parts at Arborcrest, and the Red Hot Kitten Stompers at Zola. Monday, Open Mic at the Red Room and Open Mic at Live Entertainment. Monday and Tuesday, Open Jam at Jackson Street. Tuesday, Steve Starkey at the Junkyard, Livy and Trio Dolcetto at Loren, and Jerry Lee Raines at Zola. For an entire hour of local musicians, tune into Sounds of Spokane every Sunday night at 8 on KYRS.
This is KYRS 88.1 and 92.3 FM, Thin Air Community Radio.
Students from the community school are here to tell you that domestic violence is a vicious cycle. Leaving can feel impossible, but there are resources to help you. According to Crem 2 News, Spokane has the highest rate of domestic violence in Washington.
If your partner has a violent past or you are experiencing violent or toxic behavior, get out.
For help, text START to 88788 or go to your nearest hospital.
Guarded in seas, lions, den, hierarchy. I'm transcendent, I'm transcendent. Pause from time to time, pause from time to time. Look from time to time, look from time to time.
Thank you. given the wind all it wants. Turn after turn. Believe in the limbs of hometown trees. When we let go, we'll disappear. It's our last night to lie in these arms. Last night to lie in these arms. Last night to lie in these arms. Clothes behind the door. Dreaming a light in our dark house. The sound of our hearts, cars passing by. It's our last night to lie in these arms. Last night to lie. Last night to lie in these arms.
Up next, this is Vika and the Velvets with their song Lover's Liquor Store. You can catch Vika and the Velvets live at Brickfest Saturday, June 1st, right here in Spokane at Brick West Plaza.
Kisses with your liquor breath. Crawl, your host for radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. Each week, we present notable melodramas from stage and screen, fiction and radio. So join us here on Thin Air Community Radio, 88.1 and 92.3 FM, every Friday night at midnight, for stories of mystery and the macabre, well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Official Pride Cruise departs June 1st at 5 p.m. from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, featuring dancing, drag, drinks, karaoke, and fun. Information and tickets online at SpokanePride.org/Pride Events.
Days like these, they don't come around nearly often enough to let slip away. All we need is a couple of bucks, a full tank of gas, and a long highway.
It's all right. Where we're headed, I don't need to.
everything we need.
KYRS, Medical Lake, Spokane.
Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM.
I told the witch doctor I was in love with you. I told the witch doctor I was in love with you. And then the witch doctor, he told me what to do. He said that...
told the witch doctor you didn't love me true. I told the witch doctor you didn't love me nice. And then the witch doctor, he gave me this advice. He said that ooh-ee, ooh-ah-ah, ting-tang, walla-walla-bing-bang. Ooh-ee, ooh-ah-ah, ting-tang, walla-walla-bang-bang. Ooh-ee, ooh-ah-ah, ting-tang, walla-walla-bing-bang. Ooh-ee, ooh-ah-ah, ting-tang, walla-walla-bang-bang. You've been keeping love from me just like you were a miser. And I'll admit I wasn't very smart. So I went out and found myself a guy that's so much wiser. And he taught me the way to win your heart. My friend, the witch doctor, he taught me what to say. My friend, the witch doctor, he taught me what to do. I know that you'll be mine when I say this to you. Ooh-ee, ooh-ah-ah, ting-tang, walla-walla-bing-bang. Ooh-ee, ooh-ah-ah, ting-tang, walla-walla-bang-bang. Ooh-ee, ooh-ah-ah, ting-tang, walla-walla-bing-bang.
Good morning, Spokane. Thank you very much for tuning in to another exciting episode of This Won't Hurt a Bit. My name is Mark Andrew. I am your host today. We are pre-recording today due to the holiday. We're out of town visiting family and friends. For those of you who may be tuning in for the first time, we are a medical talk show. We talk about all things medicine,